Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics Podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 64 and we're talking about fouling this week. My name is Ryan Bailey and joining me is a much happier Liverpool fan than he was last week. It's Mark Carey. Mark, how are you?
I am good. Thank you. Yeah, I actually missed the game, the record-breaking game, 9-0, or yeah. Record-equaling, I think, in the Premier League. I think record-breaking from a Liverpool perspective. But yeah, 9-0 for Liverpool was quite something. But yeah, I missed the actual game live. Normally, I'll watch every game live, but I was elsewhere on Saturday afternoon.
I mean, what I want to miss, but there does seem like there's a bit of a force field around the 10-goal mark, doesn't there, with the Premier League game? I saw someone say on Twitter earlier that maybe it's because the graphics people can't fit a 10 and a 0 on. So I was like, maybe there's actually a conspiracy that they're not allowed to score more than 9. But yeah, you're right, a record-breaking game. It's quite typical that on a week where we discussed competitiveness, obviously in last week's episode, we were saying, well, our league's pretty equal, actually.
I know.
There's a 9-0 scoreline. You just can't write it.
I know. But I think it's interesting. It probably speaks to a wider point of the teams like Bournemouth, Norwich, Fulham, to a certain extent. I think we might have spoken about this before. It's almost not their fault that they sit as between the 18th and the, let's say, 23rd best football clubs in England. That they do have that kind of yo-yo about them, where it's at the moment kind of a glorified championship team in terms of Bournemouth, that they'll be there or thereabouts near probably the bottom of the league come the end of the season. You might do a little bit better, but it's not, do you know what I mean? Someone has to be between the 18th best and the 23rd best team in the country, and those sorts of yo-yo-y teams are just, it's just the way they are. So Liverpool are essentially, and each team essentially playing, a championship team who's done very well and they're likely to maybe go back down to being a championship team next year.
Yeah, I think you're right. It must be a very difficult challenge. Speaking of challenges, the other talking point this week, which seems to have taken over Twitter massively, was that of the Richarlison incident this weekend, where I'm sure you saw that, did you? Where he was, for some reason, decided to start doing kick-ups when they were 2-0 up on the touchline. And then one of the Nottingham Forest players, I think it was Brennan Johnson, came and absolutely gave him a sit-down. Don't you dare start taking the piss kind of thing. That was, what did you make to that?
Yeah, no, I watched this one, on Sunday Live. I think Brennan Johnson was well within his rights to do that. I was really frustrated just watching it because it wasn't like you know, they were winning 9-0. And even if they were winning 9-0, it doesn't matter. You just don't really do that. And I've not got the biggest liking of Richarlison anyway, not just because he was an Everton player. I just think that sometimes he's a bit like Balotelli. You just think, why are you doing that? There's just no need to do that. You're a good player. Just be a good player. And having just taken themselves to 2-0, with 5 or 6 minutes to go, there was still maybe the opportunity for Forest to get back into it. I just thought it was such a poor show of sportsmanship. And Brennan Johnson did, you know, obviously leave one on him there. It was only a kind of a cynical one. It wasn't like he was actually trying to break his leg or anything. And then I think it crashed into Nico Williams, and I think Nico Williams sort of went down with a bit of force on top of Richarlison as well, because you just don't do that. So I wouldn't blame Brennan Johnson in the slightest. I think Richarlison brought it on himself. I don't know what you think, but I just think it's just poor sportsmanship.
Yeah, well, I think I've seen some people sort of saying, well, you know, showboating's been part of the game for years, and some of the most exciting players in the world, you know, sort of humiliate their opponents and stuff. But I think of showboating as like a Ronaldinho sort of, you know, flip-flapping through people's legs when he's taking them on. Or, you know, like when JJ Okocha did the rainbow flick over someone. That is defined as showboating. But that is almost like skillfully sort of taking on an opponent and very fairly humiliating them and beating them as part of an attack. Whereas Richarlison had no one around him, and he just decided to start just doing some quite poorly executed, in my opinion, kick-ups. You know what I mean? I was just like, what on earth are you trying to achieve there? Like, it was almost like laziness, wasn't it? And just sort of like, ugh, this is easy. So I thought it was a bit out of order, really. I mean, I'm not sure it deserves the absolute condemnation he's got, but I just thought it wasn't particularly impressive, really, which most showboating I can remember, or when it comes to mind, I think of really sort of impressive skills, like a Neymar or something. Do you know what I mean? Someone really demonstrating skill rather than just taking the mic.
I do. I think that the showboating you refer to kind of has to be functional in the sense, that it's designed to beat a player or to get forward or to do something that helps your team. But that was just completely pointless and needless. But I think the Neymar example is an interesting one. I think, if I recall, for PSG, Neymar did that where I think he beat his player. I think PSG must have been winning comfortably at this point. Beat his player and then went back and beat him again. And then I think maybe tried to do a rainbow flick and was just asking for trouble. And I think he got snapped in two. This is going back a few years now. And again, you start to think it's warranted to a certain extent where, you know, if you're doing it purely to go back and humiliate the player again, if you beat your man or beat your opponent, then go and pass it, then it's kind of fair game. But if you're trying to do it purely to humiliate people, I thought there's a time and a place. I pretty much agree with you.
It's funny you mentioned Balotelli. Do you remember the one where he had an open goal and he tried to backheel it and missed?
Yeah, he got taken off straight away. That was in a pre-season friendly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just attitude for me.
Don't know why that one came to mind. Yeah. Very funny. Well, anyway, it's no coincidence that I've brought that up, because obviously the Brennan Johnson challenge resulted in a foul, Mark. Hey?
Like it.
And which is the subject of today's episode. So with that very subtle tease, shall we get cracking?
Beautiful segue. Let's get going.
So, fouls. Such a massive part of the game, and I might be wrong, but I can't remember, Mark, as ever within 64 episodes talking about fouls that much. Am I right?
Yeah, we do this a lot, though, don't we? We said this with the manager episode a couple of episodes back, that there's still so much within the game that we can talk about. So we go down different routes, talk about tactics, talk about analytics, and there's still so many obvious ones straight in front of us, which I think is a good thing. It shows that we've got more opportunity for more episodes.
We're not finished yet. Yeah. We've still got fouls to discuss. First of all, potentially stupid question, what comes to mind when you think of fouling? Do you think of like a clumsy accidental challenge? Do you think of a deliberate Brennan Johnson kind of snapping their opponent foul? What comes to mind when you think of fouling?
I'd probably just say something that's kind of just a mistimed challenge. It's funny because there's so much to talk about with fouls, but my initial overriding thought on it is kind of the mundane side of it, which I think accounts for a large proportion of what fouls actually are, which is just, okay, yeah, a little bit mistimed there, stop, kind of, yeah, have the free kick and go again. But yeah, there is obviously, which we'll come on to, a lot of nuance to fouls, and we can kind of break down the type of fouls that we have.
Do offsides and handballs make up the majority of, you know, if you had to categorize a pie chart of like different types of fouls, I wonder how much actual challenges and stuff make up of that whole arc, because I bet accidental handballs and offsides are like a massive part of that these days, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think offside would count as a foul.
Does it not?
I don't believe so. I think obviously it would be a free kick. I don't know whether it would be a foul per se. And it's interesting, actually.
Breaking the rules of the game.
I haven't got the data on it, but I wouldn't have thought of handball as one of the highest proportions of fouls out there. Is that what you went to first of all, then?
Yeah, kind of, actually. I mean, in hindsight, that's probably a stupid question, because you wouldn't get sent off for being offside, would you? Or maybe some people would, I don't know. But yeah, in hindsight, that probably doesn't work. Okay, scrap that question. yeah, but you know what? I think actually, a better question is, do you think the physicality of the game and stuff has drastically changed in the time that we've been following football? Because, and further back still, I guess, but something I often watch is, have you seen the Steven Gerrard tackle compilation?
Obviously, yes.
But within, you know, the last 15 years even, that some of the challenges that people like Steven Gerrard and obviously Roy Keane and people like that used to put in, real sort of bone-shattering challenges where they've won the ball and they're fantastic defensive challenges. But you just don't get away with that kind of thing now, do you, at all? And I wonder how much that's changed within the game since we've sort of been watching football.
Yeah, the referees speak about like excessive force and things like that, where, yeah, even if you do win the ball, if you try to pretty much leave one on your opponent, it's sort of gone out of the game, I think, as you say. You still have good tackles, good challenges, and it's not to say that the game is no longer physical. But I'd probably agree that, I don't know how to exactly quantify it. You wouldn't quantify it based on the number of fouls, but it'd be one to try and quantify of just how less, yeah, physical certain challenges are. It's a bit more kind of clean in terms of the way that you nick it away from the opponent, maybe, rather than actually, yeah, go for a bit of a leveler to try and let them know you're there, sort of thing. But I mean, I'll bounce it back to you. Do you feel like it has as well? I certainly do.
Well, yeah, and then I feel like this year especially, there's something that I noticed anyway, but then was brought up in commentary a few times of some of the games I've watched, but the level of referee leniency seems to have changed, doesn't it, this year? Because there's quite a few challenges this year that I think in the last two, 3 years going back, you just wouldn't have got away with, which I guess is the idea. Maybe the idea is to sort of try and get a more free-flowing game. I don't know. But I mean, it felt like you couldn't go 5 minutes without 10 fouls last year or the year before. To me personally, you'd kind of just be like, oh, the flow of this game is really interrupted quite a lot. But then I think Jamie Carragher said it in one of the games the other day, a foul is still a foul. You know, it's a really hard one, is it? We won't talk too much about refs in this episode because that's something we want to do another time, but it's a really hard one to judge what a foul is. It's so subjective, isn't it? So I guess when you're trying to like analyze it within numbers and patterns and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot more to it than just that is a categorical foul and that's not.
Well, exactly. I think it comes down to the type of foul, of which there are so many. But I think I said this on another podcast before, that you wonder whether, if things are, I've seen it a couple of times already this season, there's some decisions which are let go, and yeah, it's been an active thing that the referees have been told to do, isn't it, where, you know, they're supposed to, as you say, let the game flow and have a higher threshold for a foul.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether sometimes you see it in the crowd as well, when a foul isn't, what is deemed to be a foul, isn't blown up by the referee, it sort of aggravates the team who feels they are fouled, and then it becomes a little bit like for like, and then they might put, a bit like the Brennan Johnson one, more of an aggravated challenge in as a consequence. Yeah. And you see I've seen it a couple of times already, the player in question who felt like they were fouled then goes and nips back at the player, fouls them, and goes to the referee to say, well, how is that one not a foul that I've just had? And then the foul itself kind of becomes maybe a little bit more dangerous, a bit more cynical, caused potentially by the idea of the referee letting it go, but then having no choice but to then call the foul, if you're still with me, because the player feels aggravated by it. So it might actually lead to more players being a bit more het up, and then that sort of ruins the spectacle itself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a very good place to start from a analytical analysis point of view that I want to ask you is, within the Premier League last season, who was the team that made the most fouls? And I guess we can come to, but what kind of thing that can tell us, and what different ways we can look at it?
Yeah, I mean, well, this is the thing. It's like everything we speak about in terms of the context of it. If you were to just look at the most fouls last season, in total, it would be Leeds United, 469 okay. fouls in total, 12.3 per 90 minutes. But as I say, I think, you know, that alone doesn't really tell you a great deal, because it's not accounting for how much opportunity you have to foul or to make any defensive action, which we've spoken about at length across all of our, you know, our episodes since we've started, that, you know, defensively you've got to possession adjust, these sorts of things. So, for example, Manchester City on average have the fewest, or had the fewest fouls per 90 last season, 8.5 fouls. But that makes complete sense, because when you have the ball, you can't make a defensive action, and therefore you can't make a foul. So looking at it in terms of, yeah, the totals, not too insightful, but nevertheless, it was Leeds who fouled the most, which I think, I don't know about you, but that makes sense to me in terms of how aggressive they were. You know, last season it was a mixture of Bielsa and Marsh, wasn't it? But how aggressive they are in their, under Bielsa, and man-marking style off the ball, really just chasing, harrying, hounding the opposition, and you're bound to get a few fouls here and there, aren't you?
You absolutely are. And so I'm looking at an article which is titled "Who Commits the Most Fouls in the Premier League? Separating the Clumsy from the Clever." And the author is a certain Mark Carey on July 29th, 2022.
Oh, I wouldn't listen to him.
Now, I'm just looking at, I think, the table that you're referring to. But the thing I just take from what you just said, it's obviously Leeds are at the top there with 12.3 fouls committed per 90. I was going to ask, well, you're right, because Man City obviously have more of the ball, which means there's less opportunities for them to commit a foul because they've got the ball. But then on that list, Norwich are the team that committed the fourth least fouls per 90, which then doesn't, you're right, there must be different ways to look at it, because that you'd think that they would be defending more than anyone after last season. Do you
well,
know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll put it to you, Ryan. What would that maybe suggest, as in terms of context, in terms of what Norwich's approach was off the ball last season?
Just sort of sit back and let people shoot?
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. It suggests a bit of a passive approach. They're not that any manager wants their team to foul, but at least it shows that you can only make a foul by, well, more often than not, for the most part, by looking to make a defensive action. It maybe suggests that Norwich were being maybe quite passive off the ball, and was a reason with, you know, for their demise last season. They weren't being aggressive enough, which, okay, is stylistic for some teams, but for Norwich, maybe it was shown that they were a little bit too passive.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned adjusting for possession. You've told us this before in different times, but just as a refresher for anyone who might have joined us since our previous episodes, what do you mean by that exactly, when you're trying to, you know, adjust statistics to possession?
Yeah, well, straightforward on, really, in terms of if all, well, at the player level and at the team level, you basically want to account for the opportunity to defend when talking about defensive actions. So rather than doing it just in the raw number, I always use the example, which I can't do anymore, actually. I always use the example of a Manchester City player versus a Burnley player. And because Burnley are obviously no longer in the Premier League, I can't do that. But a Burnley player...
They're still a team, mate.
Yeah, true. But within the same league, let's go with the team that we've spoken about just earlier, Bournemouth. So a Bournemouth player is more likely to make a defensive action compared with a Manchester City player, because they don't have as much of the ball, so they've got more opportunity to defend. So if you do something that is a defensive action per 1,000 opponent touches, it's just a level playing field for all, at the player level and team level, for everyone to be able to see what a team does or a player does when given equal opportunity. And then that starts to just become a little bit clearer to a, you know, a team style or a player's style off the ball of how much they look to make a tackle or a foul, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
That if you have an equal playing field, you can start to tease out the sort of bit more signal from the noise.
I see. Okay.
That being said, when you do control for, you know, for possession per 1,000 opponent touches, Leeds still do top the list, which again feeds into what we spoke about before in terms of their style off the ball to be quite dogged. Again, kind of a little bit convoluted because it was a Marsh and Bielsa season last year, but still shows what they look to do off the ball. And we spoke about Manchester City being the lowest. They come up to third behind Chelsea.
Oh.
And Liverpool are fourth, actually. So when controlling for the opportunity, it shows that those top teams do press quite a lot, and as a consequence, will more likely to make fouls because they are quite aggressive off the ball. As soon as they lose it, win it back as quickly as they can. If there are some fouls, you know, along the way, so be it. But again, it shows their style. So when you do adjust for possession, as I say, you start to get a bit more clarity where Manchester City go from what you would maybe consider to be the most passive, if you did it, you know, per 90 minutes, to when it's per 1,000 opponent touches, the third highest. So it shows just what they like
just
to
do. Just shows how many touches they have, really, doesn't it?
Well, also true.
Yeah. Well, West Ham, interestingly, pretty much at the bottom of both those lists, which is an interesting one. I never really think of them as a passive team, but when you look at things like this, it makes you think that they are.
Yeah, true. I think they don't tend to press all that high. David Moyes likes them to have really good shape as much as anything, doesn't he? And then when they do get the ball, counter or, you know, attack really quickly. A bit more, I suppose, in the style of a Antonio Conte Tottenham, you know, at the moment. I think, obviously, yeah, watching the Nottingham Forest game against Spurs, I don't know if you saw the whole game, but Forest, I should say, were dominating the ball and really knocking it around for long periods, especially in the first half. But Spurs, I'd say, were still comfortable because they didn't necessarily have to harry and hound, but they were just in really good shape. Then when they got it, very vertical and making sure that they just attacked quickly and got up the field really fast. So it's just a stylistic thing, I think, which is why, as you say, seeing West Ham there is an interesting one, but probably because of the way that David Moyes likes them to be off the ball.
Is there parallels with thinking about fouls in this way to one of my favourite things we've ever covered, the PPDA metric? Is there correlations with that? You know, you're obviously talking about stylistically. I can see that, you know, the sort of the Liverpools and Man Cities are all big on pressing, aren't they, and all that sort of stuff. Are there correlations between those things?
Yeah, fully. Yeah, I think that's why they are where they are. When you account for the possession, because as I say, if you're going to be getting tight, in order to press, you have to look to get tight to your opponent. And when you get tight to your opponent, you're more likely to make a defensive action. Now, of those defensive actions that you make, some of them are going to end in fouls. You're going to try and look to make a challenge. Not every single one that you look to make is going to come off. But again, it just shows that intent to try and get really close and really tight and win that ball back. And when you do win the ball back, that's obviously when it's intended to be high up the field and you can obviously try and profit from, a transitional moment. So, yeah, really closely correlated, really closely linked in terms of the PPDA, something we've spoken about before at length, and the fouls that you make. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. If you were to think of the sort of the first person that comes to mind when you think of prolific Fowler, which player comes to mind?
Robbie Fowler, very prolific in his day. top man. A friend of yours, actually. You've worked with him previously.
A dad joke.
Sorry. That was too easy. You spiked me up for that. That was very easy.
I really did, actually, yeah. I also can't think of another player called Fowler off the top of my head, which is probably embarrassing. But yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, last season, I don't know, probably someone like Granit Xhaka, say. Who would you think of?
Well, I wasn't thinking about last season. I was thinking Gattuso. I don't know why.
Oh, historically, fine.
Yeah, I was thinking like a Gattuso or a... Roy Keane obviously comes to mind for absolutely horrific fouls, doesn't he? yeah, I don't know. I was thinking if we put that to listeners, who would come back most as like the first person you think of? Who comes to mind? Because I guess what I'm getting at is when you think of that question, or when I think of that question, certainly I'm doing that thing where I'm thinking horrific lunging challengers, dirty players. But the segue I wanted to make on that was the fact that there's such a concept of a tactical foul, which I know some people are like the masters in, But I don't think of Gattuso when I think of a tactical Fowler. I think of Gattuso as a bad challenger, or Paul Scholes. You know what I mean? Paul Scholes was notoriously bad at tackling, so he just committed loads of fouls.
Well, who would you think of when you think about tactical foul? I've got one in mind, definitely.
I wonder if our person is the same. I think Fernandinho.
Yeah. That's mine.
Isn't that weird that we both think that then? So there's a reason that he is a notorious tactical fouler.
Yeah. Well, he breaks the play up so often. And I haven't looked to see how many yellow cards he's got, but it just looks as though it was just a little bit clumsy, a little bit mistimed, rather than it being like a cruncher where he's really kind of gone for the player. It's just like, oh, that was a little bit late. That wasn't really all that intentional. But from a tactical perspective, that's why it's a tactical foul. It's broken up the play and allowed Manchester City to get back in shape if they were maybe in a transitional moment.
Well, is that how we're defining tactical foul then? Because that was going to be my question, because that's obviously a term that is used very often. And I think the eye test for a tactical foul is, you know, it's quite simple. When someone brings someone down, when they think there's some danger and they think they can get away with it, that's how I kind of think of a tactical foul. But is there something to do with where a tactical foul takes place, when it takes place, that kind of stuff that categorises it?
Yeah, well, I looked into this a little bit within that piece, and there's obviously criteria for referees, I suppose, but also from a data perspective. And I looked at it from Opta's perspective, and they basically flag a tactical foul when a player is shown a yellow card for committing a foul that interferes with or stops a promising attack. So, yeah, there's definitely kind of a clear theme. Maybe it doesn't matter where that is on the pitch. As you say, it could be, well, this is what I think is really interesting. When it looks kind of clear and obvious, if it's maybe on the halfway line, you've only got the other half of the pitch to get to, it looks quite obviously a tactical foul, because you can see quite clearly that there's maybe an overload on a certain wing or whatever. But if it's sort of done like a Fernandinho style, if it's done really quickly, quite high up the field for the team who's just lost the ball, then it can look a little bit unintentional, but it's really shut down that potential counter-attack early on. But it looked more clumsy, which I think is a really intelligent tactical foul that isn't necessarily given a yellow card, but has done exactly what it's intended to do, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You've referred to it as the dark arts in your piece here, which I really like, because you're so right in terms of some players just have the knack of knowing how to break it up at exactly the right moment and get away with it, and it really sort of disrupts the flow of another team if they're, like, I don't know, 1-0 up or something. You really need to block the other team from getting into any kind of rhythm. There's definitely ways of doing that, isn't it? And I think tactical fouls are one of those. Sort of, like, I mean, Atletico Madrid are obviously just sort of very dark artsy sort of people anyway, but tactical fouls are a big part of that.
Yeah, I'd probably say that it might be a bit of a stereotype, might be a bit of a generalisation, but I think that European teams outside of England have always been quite good at that. And you call it the dark arts, you can call it whatever you like, but just a bit of game intelligence to be able to manage the game off the ball and on the ball at the international level, and, you know, European level of Champions League and Europa League, etc. It can be hugely frustrating if you're the team who's suffering those tactical fouls, but ultimately it can help you win the game, progress through to the next round, or win a trophy. And I think England as a nation and in the Premier League are getting it. You don't ever want to encourage it, but you sort of feel like they are getting better at it, a bit more streetwise, to sort of put a positive spin on it.
Well, you say we don't encourage it, but I mean, when the Lionesses won the Euros, I felt like the tactical fouling and the dark arts then was like, we were sort of like, oh, wow, we've never been on this side of the fence before, you know, where it's happening to an opposition, because it's happened to us so many times as a nation, hasn't it? That it was amazing to actually see sort of in the last 10 minutes the sort of little fouls. I think Jill Scott made one at a brilliant time and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and just keeping the ball in the corner, obviously, is just thinking something that, it isn't going to be the best visual spectacle. No one really wants to go and see loads of fouls or the ball being kept in the corner for minutes at a time. But a few days, weeks, months on, years on, no one will ever remember that. All they'll do is remember the winner. So you think, well, actually, it's all part of the game. And as long as it's fairly within the rules, do it, and they did.
Absolutely. In the same way I asked you who were the most prolific foulers last season, is there a percentage of that which are tactical fouls from what you saw?
Well, I haven't necessarily looked at it at the player level, which would be really interesting to know how many tactical fouls. But at the team level, interestingly, last season, Arsenal had the highest share of tactical fouls. Of all the fouls that they committed, 9%, so nearly 1 in 10, were tactical fouls, which I thought was quite interesting.
That sounds like quite a lot.
Well, I think, so I spoke to someone about this, and they said that Arsenal were kind of known to be, a couple of seasons ago, a little bit too nice, a little bit too naive, and sort of able to be played through, you know, through central areas when they lost the ball. And they needed to kind of develop that nastiness, for want of a...
Yeah.
Or, you know, again, streetwise, whatever you want to call it, dark arts, etc., to be able to stop that happening from being too nice. So it's interesting to see that they have been one of the highest amongst the Premier League teams, at least. And Crystal Palace were the lowest in terms of tactical fouls, which might just be that they are really nice lads and they don't need to... They don't need to do any dark arts.
We don't need tactical foul.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And talk to me about, you know, we said, you know, when Man City maybe lose the ball up the pitch, you can just imagine Fernandinho grabbing someone's shirt quickly and pulling them down when they lose possession. Is there an area of the pitch where most tactical fouls sort of traditionally take place? I know that's probably very general because it would vary massively with different teams, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, is... The tactical fouls mostly happen, would you say, in the opposition's third, as opposed to like tactical foul and so on the edge of your own box, which isn't advisable?
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the criteria of a tactical foul, especially when you get a yellow card, it's when there's a promising attack or a promising counter-attack, I think would probably be a little bit more accurate, where if it was on the edge of your own area, I don't think it would be a tactical foul. I think it would just be a foul. I looked at the general locations of the fouls for each team in the Premier League, and you can see quite noticeably that Liverpool and Manchester City, their share of fouls just outside the opponent's box is higher than average compared to the league average, which is interesting. Of course, that makes sense because they're more likely to play a higher line when they have the ball. They're going to just squeeze the play a little bit. So it makes sense that it's just shifted forward. But I do think that's interesting from the Liverpool and Manchester City perspective. And what I also looked at was then essentially how, of all of the fouls that are committed within the opponent's half, how many are committed within 8 seconds of when they lose the ball. So again, I think this feeds really neatly into the PPDA of just how relentless they'll press when losing the ball. So it's no coincidence that the sorts of teams who are high up on this measure are teams who have a high... pressing intensity, basically. But Manchester City and Liverpool, of all the fouls that they've made in the opponent's half, they're the two highest. They're the highest share of the fouls are within 8 seconds. So 60% was nearly 61% for Manchester City and nearly 60% for Liverpool of the fouls that they make in the opponent's half were made within 8 seconds. So it shows, again, in an intelligent way that I feel like sometimes if it's done so quickly, those fouls do look a little bit kind of frantic, a little bit rushed. It gives the impression to the referee that it was almost accidental. But, you know, when you think about it from a tactical perspective, it's
so
like
fast.
Shut it down. And you don't intend to always make the foul in terms of the tactical foul, but shut it down really quick. Don't let the opposition even get out, even try and form some sort of attacking structure. Just nip it in the bud really quickly and then... Either you gain the ball and win it high up, or you've at least got time to regroup if you do make the foul, which, again, think about the dark arts and the streetwise side of it, no coincidence that the two best teams who do it are the two best teams in the land.
Yeah, very, very good. It all fits, doesn't it?
And it's a slight segue, Ryan, but I wanted to quiz you on something. I think we actually spoke about this at the end of last season when we did our kind of roundup, but can you guess the player who has been... fouled or who was fouled the most last season? If you really thought about it, who do you think was fouled the most? I'll give you the number actually while you think. It was 101 times that this player
in the season
that this player had suffered a foul, and the second on the list was 81. So okay, you do take into account of how many minutes they played. I'm talking about totals. I've completely gone against everything I've just said in terms of possession justice.
Yeah,
but 20 more than any other player. This player had been fouled 101 times. Can you guess And while the listeners are also thinking about it, can you guess who that player is?
Well, it's got to be a prolific dribbler, mm-hmm. I'm going to say. The obvious answer would have been in seasons gone by, Jack Grealish, but I don't...
Jack Grealish is 10th on the list.
Yeah, I don't think he played enough last year for it to be him.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it a Man City player?
It is not a Manchester City player. If I say the team, you'll know who it is, but it is a London-based team. They are in South London.
It's Wilfred Zaha, isn't it?
It's Wilfred Zaha.
Yeah.
101
times. Because
every
time he gets the ball, he obviously just looks to beat someone, regardless of whether it's the right decision to make, doesn't he? Because he's a very, very good dribbler, a very tricky man.
A very good dribbler. Sometimes a little bit frustrating, though. And I think the same with Jack Grealish. This is probably, there's another episode in this as well. This is great content. But yeah. I always think, like, drawing the foul as a player sometimes isn't always the best thing, because you can obviously release the ball quicker and maybe advance, you know, to help your team more broadly. But Zaha and, you know, the likes of Jack Grealish as well, hold on to the ball just for that little bit, you know, for me, a little bit too long. And then it can actually be quite frustrating to watch, I think, as the supporter. But a little bit of a segue, a little bit of a quiz, but you got it right in the end. Yeah. Wilfred Zaha, most fouled player.
Well, that'll be why Crystal Palace had the least tactical fouls, because basically Zaha was hogging the ball and then he was getting fouled all the time. So they didn't have time to make their own.
Fouls made or fouls suffered. But Wilfred Zaha, top of the bill.
Very nice. Mark, this is exciting. Why don't you tell the listeners about our new collaboration with Spitch? Tell them what Spitch is.
Yeah, we've been wanting to share this with the listeners for some time. So Spitch is basically a live fantasy football manager app, and you can pit yourself against other managers, basically. And the fun thing is that you can win real money in the process. And what's great is that you can compete across multiple leagues worldwide. So rather than just the Fantasy Premier League that we do, you can compete in other leagues like the German Bundesliga, the Premier League, of course, and others like the Champions League and the Europa League.
I mean, if it was like Fantasy Premier League, then we'd win absolutely nothing. But it's not like Fantasy Premier League, because the difference is you can create a brand new lineup for each match day. So basically, no more selection regret when a player you've chosen is going through a bad run of form. What else is different, Mark?
Well, I think it's right up our street, because it goes into greater depth with the analytics side, which is so true to the Football Fanalytics podcast. So it awards points for basically every action on the pitch. So things like passes, tackles, blocks, and shots, everything that you can think of, all count towards your match score.
So for the first time ever, we can cheer on a pot shot from miles away.
Exactly.
So make sure you sign up, download the app, and register now. Once you've registered, you can join the Football Fanalytics Podcast League. So come and get involved, play against me and Mark. The link is in our bio. Join Spitch now. The final thing I want to talk about, Mark, and I'm careful here because I don't want to encroach on something that we've been excited to do for a while, which is based on referees. So I don't want to sort of encroach too much into that territory. But we can't talk about fouls without talking about cards, can we?
Mm.
So, yellows, reds, etc., etc.
Well, just yellows and reds.
Actually, it's just yellows and reds. There isn't another one, is there? Yeah, you know the rest. There isn't any. So, who was the most carded team last year?
Most carded team last season, which I think, again, we might have spoken about before at the end of last season, was Leeds United with 103 yellow cards. I think that might have been, wow, there was some element of a record there as well. I don't know how many teams had reached more than 100 yellow cards in a single season, which is quite something. Everton second on the list with 80, joint second actually with Newcastle United. So 23 more than the nearest team.
Wow.
Leeds United, 103.
I mean, that's a couple of games, isn't it? Like, that's a lot.
That is 2.7 per 90. So nearly three yellow cards per game, which again feeds into their sort of dogged style off the ball. You're going to pick up a few yellow cards here and there.
Mm. So can cards tell us, this might be a really weird question, but can cards tell us anything about how much teams foul? Do you know what I mean? Because obviously getting carded is very subjective. Like, is there a certain amount of cards per foul? Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. Or fouls Picard even, the other way around.
Yeah, I think, as you say, it comes back full circle to what we said at the very start. It depends on the foul, obviously. If they are kind of cynical fouls or just poor challenges, late challenges that actually do endanger the opponent, then it's more likely to be a yellow card. If it is just a little bit of a poorly timed challenge, you know, but nothing much in it, stop the game, start again sort of thing, then you're less likely to get a yellow card, obviously. So I suppose it does maybe feed into the type of fouls that teams are making, or maybe what sort of fouls teams are getting away with. Because, again, I found it interesting. So in terms of fouls committed per yellow card last season, Manchester City were the most, I'm trying to think of the exact word, but they got away with the most, shall we say, or maybe their fouls weren't all that cynical, but they were top of the list. So they had 7.5 fouls committed per yellow card. So they had a longer rope from the referee, shall we say. And at the other end, which obviously feeds into what we just said, Everton and Leeds, both the joint fewest fouls made per yellow card. So 4.6 fouls per yellow card. So they didn't really get away with all that many fouls before they then got a yellow
card. That's not many at all.
Which again, I think is interesting. I know that Leeds are, you know, an exception there because of the way that they maybe play. But Everton and Newcastle United, 4.9, they're, you know, there or thereabouts as well. Maybe because they're a slightly passive. I'd be really interested to see the likelihood of a yellow card the closer the team gets to your goal, if that makes sense. So it's like, okay, well, that was clearly making a foul there where it could have been, you know, a free kick for a shot at goal. That's clearly a yellow card offence. Whereas Manchester City is, again, as we say, interesting. Liverpool are up there as well. 7 fouls committed per yellow card. If they are doing it higher up the field, it's like, even if the challenge is exactly the same, the location of the foul dictates the likelihood of a yellow card, I think. I don't know whether that is something that plays into the mind of the referee, but I think it must do. You know, you talk about these things as well in really terms of penalties or free kicks where they say, like, anywhere else in the field, that would have been a foul, or anywhere else in the field, that would have been a yellow card. And then you think about things like timing of the game. Again, something we should speak about in another episode, but if a foul is made in the first 30 seconds and that same foul is made, you know, 20 minutes into the second half, is there a little bit more leniency in the first 30 seconds? Maybe. Should there be? No.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So, you know, I always think those sorts of things are interesting. There's loads to speak about on what we maybe consider a fairly mundane topic of fouls, but there's loads of ways you can look at it.
There is. And like I mentioned, the episode on referees is a mouth-watering topic in terms of the different things we can talk about there. Cards being one of them.
Five of them.
All five. So I think with that, we should wrap up the fouls chat, but we will return to cards in the future at some point, so look out for that one. I really enjoyed that, Mark. Yeah, very good.
My pleasure, as always. No foul play.
I was thinking who's going to make the first foul-related
that was a poor one,
outro kind of thing. And you got there first. Dad jokes galore today. So well done on that as well. But yes, there you have it. Loads of information on fouls there. We do hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please get in touch with us. You know where you can do that. You can email us. We are fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on social media at fanalyticspod. Lots of fun things coming up for you in the next few weeks.
And potentially some guests on as well, Ryan.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. All to look forward to. So yes, thank you very much, listeners. We will see you next time. Sports Social Podcast Network.